now.
I'm in charge now, Dicky Bird. This dumb woman is in charge.
Bitch, give me the fucking gun.
She fired and hit him in the right shoulder. That surprised Garrett as much as it surprised me and Jake Ellis. Garrett exhaled with the pain, the shock, and gradually dropped his weapons.
She said,
I wish I was a man for 5 minutes. I wish I was Suge Knight big so I could beat your ass the way I want to beat your ass, then throw you in that pool. But I'm not a big man, and neither are you. Having a dick doesn't make a boy a man. I still bet I could beat your ass. Can't believe you fucking shot me. Sorry, not sorry. Who taught you to shoot a gun? Compton, Dicky Bird. Surprise. Now get ready to fight like a real man fights.
Garrett said, You shoot me? And now you want to fight?
If I wasn't hurt so bad, I'd fight you. I would drag you up and down those stairs. Elaine, give me that fucking gun. Shut up, Israel. Stop saying my name like I'm a child.
Lower the gun, Elaine. Don't fucking shoot me again.
Now you know how I feel. Now you feel the pain I feel.
Shooting me is not called for. We argue, we fight, we don't shoot each other.
You've done things to me before, but never like this. Never like this. You slapped me, you headbutted me before. I've made honest mistakes and you've thrown me against walls. I told myself it wasn't that bad. Told myself that I was being a bad wife. Learned to lie to you to keep the peace. Had to lie to keep from being hit. Convinced myself I deserved it when you did get angry and take it out on me. Said I deserved to be locked in my closet. That it was all my fault.
You get out of control. I only did what I had to do to get you to behave.
Like an animal in a zoo. I never hit you out of anger. Only to correct you.
I'm not a child. Don't make it sound like I am a child, then sleep with me. I only discipline you. You act like a shrew and bring the punishment on yourself.
Blame the victim. Everything you do is someone else's fault. Everything about this marriage is a lie. When that memory shit shows up on Facebook, when it forces me to look at our post-prenup marriage pictures from years ago, I want to call and curse out Mark Zuckerberg. Elaine, let me see you hit a man the way you hit me. Let me see you correct a man.
Elaine, you might be a zookeeper, but I'm not an animal in a zoo. You fucking shot me!
With a gun my money paid for.
You added insult to injury, and with me standing here bleeding to death, with your goons at your side, now you want me to fight?
Fight one of them, or catch some more lead.
So, now you're the zookeeper.
No, I'm your wife. I'm your wife. Same as I've been since I was duped and married you.
Elaine, you were never duped. How could you live like this and be duped?
I hear lead poisoning is bad for the health. As bad as the water in Flint, only quicker and with a lot less pain. I read that 380 bullets are very bad for the health, even for animals like you.
Elaine, you're better than this.
No, I'm not.
Don't point that gun at me while you're upset like that. Fight. Or get shot again. Be glad I'm giving you a choice. We're at a new altar, and I'm sorry. No attorney is going to magically appear so you can negotiate this post-nuptial moment.
Garrett motioned at me. His wife shook her head, stopped the match, still crying.
No, zookeeper. Not him.
Garrett growled. You gave me an option. I choose to fight this one.
You didn't give me an option on my wedding day. You gave me an ultimatum. You don't get to choose. You fight who I say you fight, or get shot again.
I'm making the rules now.
He pointed at me like he was still in charge.
This one!
She coughed again.
No, Dicky Bird. Fight the African. After they left today, you went on and on and on talking about how you could have kicked his black ass, only you didn't use the word black. You called him the name of that Dick Gregory book a million times.
Garrett winced, held his wounded arm.
Don't do this, Elaine. For better or for worse.
Dicky Bird, I think I'm covered by our contract. Not doing this is not in my prenup.
Elaine, I'm shot. I need a damn doctor. You shot me.
Fight.
It won't be a fair fight.
What's fair to a man like you? What's fair to a man who called his wife fat, old, ugly, and who was mean to her for fun? Unfair is the only kind of fight you know how to be in.
His wife was younger but she was in charge. She was half-past dead, rocking in PTSD, and in charge. The oppressed housewife had conquered, risen, and that had been Garrett's biggest fear. Garrett might as well have been trying to negotiate his bullshit with Judge Faith. Mrs. Garrett held her side in agony.
I hope he kills you 10 times.
Elaine, how much? Just tell me how much you want. 2-3 million?
What?
How much do you want a year? Just tell me how much. I will make it retroactive.
I want nothing. I never wanted anything. But you hurt my feelings.
I could have it wired to an account that no one will have access to but you.
All I've ever wanted was to be happy. And children. You robbed me, Elaine. While I loved you, despite all of this, you have come up very short. I had faith. I was patient. Hoped you'd change. Hoped I wasn't a fool. I bet the whole town is laughing at me like I'm silly, poor, foolish, white trash from Compton. You haven't put much love on the table. Not like I did all these years. I did my best to be pretty enough, to be smart enough. I should have cheated on you a long time before, long before today, if a blowjob is considered cheating.
You and Nekafa?
I have been depressed for so long, sneaking to take pills, and ashamed to admit it.
Well, I sat at my dinner table.
You should have never talked down to me in front of them. I'd forgot what my mom had taught me. Women will always have more value than men. I forgot my worth. Eggs are expensive, and sperm is cheap. You can have this house, the cars, and your boat. Jesus of Lubbock, but you'll never be worth more than me. Shit in a golden toilet still looks and smells like shit.
In my house?
I know it goes against the original marriage vows, the legal document I regrettably signed after that prenuptial agreement was forced on me, but I enjoyed cheating on you. That made me a bad Christian, and I'll deal with that when I die and see Jesus, but I enjoyed it. About time I enjoyed something. Damn shame to live like this, to have all this, a life of silver and gold, and enjoy nothing in life.
She was coming apart.
All this shit, because you called a man a word that you should have kept on the other side of your capped teeth. Well, I'm not stupid, and I know it's more complicated than that. Way more complicated. But even with you trying to rip off San Bernardino, I'll say that was the spark. You have called black people that since I have known you. I told you years ago you'd one day say that to the wrong black man. Well, we've had that day. This has been the most awful day of my goddamn life. The most awful. And I can't take another. I hope he kills you like you tried to kill me. I hope you feel like you've been kicked downstairs, raped, and get drowned in freezing water. Zookeeper, from this animal that you have kept in your magnificent cage in this loveless marriage, I hope it takes a long time for you to see my Jesus.
Elaine.
Stop saying my name, Israel.
4 million a year. For every year we've been married.
She fumed. Offended. And insulted as her words erupted.
I don't know how many times I've slept with you as your wife, Dickie Bird, but right now, I know that's over and done with. That bed right there, I hate that bed. I hate it when you called me to come get in that bed with you. You might as well have had me upside down on a cross on Friday the 13th because it felt like I was fucking Satan. All you ever did was sexualize me. You never saw me as an equal. I'm more than a sexual being. Women are more than sexual beings, Dickie Bird. I'm more than a cook and a maid. I was always scared, afraid you'd get angry, that you'd do a few lines and have one Pabst Blue Ribbon too many and react to something I did, something you saw as wrong, and spend all night locked in my closet because I'd be afraid that you'd slap me again. You slapped me because I didn't fold your T-shirts as good as they do at the stores in the mall. You slapped me because I made the bed and the sheets didn't have hospital corners. I was a good wife. I'm intelligent, beautiful, brave, strong, supportive. And if you were wrong, if I corrected you, you slapped me. You hated that I was witty, optimistic, majestic, loving, nurturing. For that, you slapped me. We're done. I want a divorce. I don't know what life has for me next, but right now I know that I'm out of fucks. 0 fucks to give, you leathery piece of shit. You destroyed my hair! I put up with snoring, farting, cursing at children, burping, smoking, leaving the toilet seat up! Had to put up with you watching the most disgusting porn, and you have the nerve. You cut off my hair! Why? How can one man be so evil?
Wounded enforcers in the shadows. Dead men by the pool. Bullet holes in walls. Furniture turned over.
Garrett holding his arm,
wincing, bleeding all over his beautiful beige carpet, and they fell into an argument. Jake Ellis was about to jump in. He had had enough, knew we were short on time, that this needed to be done, and Garner was ready to put his paws on Garrett, but I didn't let him interrupt the woman. I had learned a long time ago to stop interrupting women when they talked, especially an angry woman with a pretty pink gun. Now wasn't the time to shut down a woman who had just survived sexual assault, being beaten, kicked, slapped, humiliated, and almost drowned. If she wanted to curse him out until sunrise, I'd let her. If she shot that bastard in the head, I'd help her bury the body in Chino and do the same with a gun, then take bleach and scrub down this house top to bottom. We were her sentries, our eyes on Garrett and those blades he would use as swinging guillotines, and that probably included using them on his wife, if he was given the chance.
Elaine, I'm sorry. Let's work on this marriage. I'm a fucking loser for marrying you. I am bleeding to death, and I'm trying to apologize for everything. For everything.
She let loose.
Zero fucks. Zero. Beyonce got cheated on, and I got beat on. Men are trash, and you are garbage made for the collector. I will never, never be in a relationship again. I'm done living this life. I am so fucking done. I'm tired. I am in so much pain, and I'm tired. Tired of existing. I'm out of this toxic relationship, Dickie Bird. I'm out of fucks. All fucks gone.
A woman who had no fucks to give was beautiful and terrifying all at once. She had a lot to say, but now she signaled to us that she was finally done. She'd unloaded years of rage. Hands already in fists, Jake Ellis nodded. This main event is about to be on. I added, and if you touched one hair on my ex-wife's head, if he doesn't kill you, I will. My wounded compadre, Jake Ellis, regarded me.
Bro, you mean the Eskimo?
Bro, it was Ethiopia, not the Eskimo.
She came back? When did I miss that?
Long story. She left my spot and Garrett sent his boys after her.
Why was she at your spot?
The blackmail problem.
She's mixed up in this?
No, just happened to be standing at the wrong place at the wrong time.
You were with the Eskimo, then ended up with Ethiopia?
Let it go for now. I faced off with Garrett. I need her to be safe, untouched. Garrett considered me.
If you want her to be safe, stop the African. I will make that call, and after you're done, the other offer stands. I'll raise the $200,000. You can cash in tonight.
Jake Ellis said,
Mayo, you're going to make that call anyway.
The wick of war had been lit. Jake Ellis shoved a bench out of the way, then went to the bed made for a king, grabbed two pillows, yanked the pillowcases off. He wrapped his hands with the pillowcases the best he could, like a champion wrapping his moneymakers before a title bout. Mrs. Garrett coughed a handful of times, then fired another shot across the room. While Jake Ellis had gotten ready, when Mrs. Garrett gagged again, Mr. Garrett had seen an opening and hurried, bent, and picked up one of his discarded blades with his left hand. That gunshot popped, and he dropped the blade. Another shot from the .380 added an extra exclamation point to the conversation. Garrett stood, held his bloodied right arm. Jake Ellis grinned.
Want to tell me all about Dick Gregory's book now?
Garrett was defiant, wanted to call Jake Ellis a nigger again. It was in his eyes. Jake Ellis stood tall.
Nigger, nigger, nigger. Well, this nigger has your Darwin Award.
I said, this ain't about that slur. Jake Ellis said,
Oh, bruv, we are way beyond fighting over European slurs. Way beyond that. This has nothing to do with San Bernardino. This man came to where I live, to where you live, bricked my car, set my town on fire, kidnapped you, and he has abused his wife?
Monkey-faced Garrett barked,
You're still a nigger. You'll never be more than a nigger, and you know that. Being an African nigger, hanging with an American nigger won't make you a better nigger, nigger.
I saw why Garrett had been a problem for San Bernardino. No one told a king what he could not do. He was still the fucking king of this fucking lawless piece of shit mansion. Done pretending,
Garrett attacked the weakest of the lot. You cunt. You worthless cunt.
Fake Christian. You haven't been to church once since we married and won.
This is your last chance, Elaine. Don't walk away from me. Throw me that gun.
This is my gun. I bought this with my money. You can't get mad and take this away from me like you will my allowance or clothes or my shoes or my car. This belongs to me.
I moved, and Jake Ellis looked at me. He saw me pulling pillowcases off pillows.
What do you think you're doing?
I said, when you get tired of hitting a heavy bag, it's my turn to tenderize that fool.
Garrett snapped. Motherfucker, I will rip your balls off.
Nah, bruv. I got this. Jake Ellis held up his big mitts, hands of stone, and shooed me away, untracked me with his determination. I'm the only unlawful detainer we need tonight.
Serious? You mad, bruv?
Not mad. You know I got mad love for you. I dropped the pillows at my feet. My joggers felt wetter, heavier, colder. My dark skin was ashen, pale, hands wrinkled from the water, and looked like my flesh had aged 100 years. Mrs. Garrett said,
his eyes were supposed to be on the sparrow. I'm the sparrow. I am. He was supposed to watch over me.
Then she made a hard face, wiped tears again.
Alexa, play Biggie Smalls. I know I'm West Coast, should play some Tupac, because word to God, I've been ready to die since I was born, but this special moment calls for some Notorious B.I.G. Play Somebody's Gotta Die.
Mrs. Garrett gave that command, then added,
and play that shit loud. Play it on the Apple Booty setting, not the low setting for Dickie Bird. Let's get turned up.
Notorious B.I.G. came to life, took over 10,000 square feet from the grave. She reiterated,
Alexa, Apple Booty setting, song on repeat until I say otherwise.
Hardcore rap filled the room like deadly smoke that heralded the start of an out-of-control wildfire. So did the anger in Jake Ellis's eyes. His expression was that of a fighter at the opening bell, and he was ready to reduce a city block to ash. He was a fire that could be seen from outer space. Garrett raised his wounded arms the best he could, eyes wide, gunless, consumed with fear, and he backed up across the carpeted floor as Jake Ellis danced closer, backed around furniture that made this room look like the perfect showroom, stumbled over shoes, and when his back touched the wall, when he was cornered, when there was no room left for flight, his eyes widened more, and he knew he had to fight. One-on-one. Garrett screamed like he was releasing all fear, like he was summoning some superpower, and went at Jake Ellis, raised his wounded arm, and took the first swing at the Ghanaian who had trained on concrete in Africa's sun. He went after a man who had never been knocked down, a man who never lost a fight. While that one-sided fight went on, I looked back, but no one was behind me. Mrs. Garrett was gone. I caught her limping toward her closet, hoodie down as she ran her hands over her bald head, did that over and over, remembering her hair, her vanity, rubbed like she couldn't believe that this was where a promising life had taken her. She stopped limping, turned around in bits, slowed by agony, looked back, and she saw Jake Ellis handing her husband his ass 10 times over. She nodded, content, then frowned at Mr. Garrett. Gave daggers to a man who had said revealing things when she was drowning. He probably woke up each day boasting of his genetic superiority, and she knew he had considered her Compton relatives inferior people. White trash. He had probably told her they had better genes at Walmart than the gene pool in her lower-class family, whatever she was thinking, while Biggie Smalls gave a beat that two fighters didn't follow. She nodded at me, then closed her double doors. She hobbled away from her zookeeper and struggled to get back into her cage. Gun in hand, the wounded creature went where she felt safest from the architect of her pain. Even angry, even after being abused, that woman wasn't capable of killing. She couldn't even watch her abuser, the man who didn't hesitate to do the same to her, being beaten. He was still her husband. Maybe she punished herself for her choices. I understood. Once upon a time, I had been the cuckold. And I understood. You loved him. From your soul. You loved him.
Right or wrong, you loved him. Through the pain, you loved him. And no matter how wrong they did you, you still couldn't kill him. Each day was a new day, and you hoped it would turn around. Each day you hoped what was going south would self-correct and find true north. You told yourself if you loved them hard enough, they would have to love you. You knew if you could make them love you, all barriers would lift. You hoped that prenups, legal or metaphorical, would go away. You believed in the power of love. You believed in your love story. But time laughed. And eventually you realized nothing would change. What you felt was only what you felt. There was no love by osmosis. The one you loved would never feel what you felt. They'd never love you. Two would never become one. You realized that where you were, 10 degrees hotter than the basement of West Hell, was as good as it was going to get. And in the end, all you could do was bow your goddamn head in defeat and walk away. I was more worried about Mrs. Garrett than anything else. Some of her last words had chilled me.
Because, word to God, I've been ready to die since I was born.
She had said that like it was her mission statement, like this life was over. While an incensed Ghanaian easily outboxed her husband, while a true pugilist from Africa outfought a silver spoon who had boxed behind the walls of Princeton, while a man who learned to fight under Africa's unrelenting sun knocked her husband to the ground, stomped him, then beat him with a lamp so hard he would earn cuts that needed a dozen staples, while a blow from the lamp broke Princeton's wrist, while solid face shots knocked half his teeth out. Mrs. Garrett was in that room alone, wounded, humiliated, despondent, with a loaded gun. Somebody's gotta die. Biggie Smalls rose from the dead and stressed that theme. Somebody's gotta die. A hit dog was gonna holler, and with each hit, Garrett howled like a bitch in heat. But my heart drummed hard because I was afraid Mrs. Garrett was about to blow her brains out. Many people walked to that door and pondered the abyss, but not all tried to enter. I'd be lying if I said checking out never crossed my mind. I dealt with depression in my mid-20s. I didn't know I was depressed. Like other black men, I just called it the blues, then put on some music to match my mood. Then it was me and Jack Daniels working it out. I stepped over everything that had been wrecked, took deep breaths, exhaled, and shoved aside things that had been turned over, stepped and had to avoid broken glass. Garrett was begging for mercy as I held the wall and tried to get out of this boxing ring and hurry to that double door. I wanted to bang and make sure she wasn't in her closet about to buy an e-ticket to Jesus. One bullet could turn her closet into a mausoleum. The moment I stepped out of the enormous bedroom and put my wet feet onto the wooden floors, the second I faced four more king-size bedrooms on this level, with Biggie masking any noise from downstairs, I saw movement. I jerked, paused, and as Biggie Smalls gave the beats to Garrett's beatdown, my heart thumped hard as I looked toward the front of the manor. I took a step, then froze and stared through a dimly lit home, squinted, and tried to see beyond magnificent chandeliers, spied toward the circular driveway in front of the estate. Two black SUVs were out there in the dark, bushwhackers creeping out of each one. Chapter 28. Jake Ellis stopped standing over Garrett like Muhammad Ali had done when he taunted Sonny Liston, and ran to me when I roared his name. Both of his hands were covered in once virginal pillowcases that had been turned a bright revenge red, each Rorschached in blood. I said, "We got company." Jake Ellis asked, "Coty?" No sirens, no flashing lights, and they're just sitting there like they are waiting for us to finish up and come out so they can put us in a full set of restraints. Handcuffs, leg irons, and waist chain, and security boxes over the restraints keyholes. Jake removed the bloodied pillowcases, dropped them on the shiny wooden floor. He asked, "Do you remember the layout? How many exits this maze have?" "Too many to count. Each exit is an entrance, so they can hit us from a dozen entrances. Jumping that wall in the back might be the only out. I wish the other side of that wall was a part of Mexico that went into the heart of Ghana. Has to be a ladder around here, but
We'd still have to drop to the other side. We'd have to skydive and run across the neighbor's sprawling estate. Floodlights might hit us the second our feet touched ground, and we'd have to find a way out of that yard, I said. Two black faces jump in a white man's wall and run it like Tubman. People at the mansion on the other side of the back wall are Chinese. Rolf, the Chinese have an entire museum equating blacks to animals in China. A lot of them hate blacks and despise Africans. The way we look right now, in this zip code, we jump that wall, and they might shoot us down like we're two King Kongs on top of the Empire State Building.
I spoke louder than the bumping music. What are our options?
Jake Ellis responded in kind. Your gun ran dry.
Don't forget the cache of weapons we left sleeping at the bottom of the pool.
We wrapped them good.
The Glock I managed to pull from Davy Jones' locker worked fine.
Then I'm sure the other handguns and the assault rifles will be okay, too.
I nodded.
We need to get to those, but we don't know what's out back.
Jake Ellis went back to Garrett's bedroom. Sounded like he hit Garrett 5 or 6 more times, and came back with the 2 blades that Garrett had held when he faced us. Jake Ellis handed me one. We went down the stairs bit by bit, expecting trouble to be waiting. Maybe with guns. At ground level, the brother I had left behind on my journey up was still there, on his belly, on the cold marble floor, hands over his head. Biggie's rant masked our descent. The traitor looked up, saw me and Jake Ellis, saw the blades, and cursed to God. He shook, but kept his hands spread out like he was waiting on LAPD to take him away. He'd been free to go a long time ago, but not all men know how to be free. Jake Ellis asked,
"What's the plan, Mississippi?"
"Front door, Garner."
"Like a Butch Cassidy in the Sundance Kid?"
"You know it."
"You've got balls almost as big as mine."
"Bro, I was just in freezing water."
"Bro, steel balls don't shrivel. Who's going first?"
"Neither one of us." I called back to the terrified young man on the floor. I told him, "Get up, bushwhacker. Get on your feet, step and fetch it. And come here." The moment he stepped out, it was like being surrounded by SWAT. Every man on that team was either white or could pass for white. The men threw the bushwhacker down, put him down hard enough to break bones. Then he had knees in his back and neck, practically suffocated the brother. Not until then did they call out to their boss. When we heard the name they called, blades in hand, Jake Ellis followed me out the front door. 4 guns aimed at us, red dots moving back and forth across our hearts. We stood where we were, blinded by bright light. They came at us, ready to put us down, barking orders as we dropped the blades. Chapter 29. Their leader was a bear cat, as lethal as LAPD, as no-nonsense as Olivia Pope, and moneyed like an A-list movie star. This crew didn't work for Garrett. They were here for Garrett on behalf of their superior. The back door to the second SUV was opened, and their employer was let out. She was a drop-dead, gorgeous woman of a certain age who had slayed in her 20s and was still slaying now. She was timeless, ageless, and made being in her 50s look like she was barely in her 30s. Even at these moments before sunrise, she was style and grace, flawless in a hot white jumpsuit, iced up, and had a physique that sent most women scrambling for the gym. Body, hair, skin, fashion. She lived in a state of consistent slayage. She was a doll. A real Sheba. With amazing gams. The word on the street was that her father had been a hard shotgun-carrying blues man named Big Slim. That one-legged, hard-drinking Mississippi gangster had been a rough, tough, mean son of a bitch who had run a pool hall in North Hollywood. A pool hall that had prison rules and housed a den of con men, thieves, murderers, double-crossers, and assassins. When Boss Lady was young, the old man had sent her away to protect her. It had been better that no one knew he had a kid. Couldn't be exploited. He lived in that pool hall and didn't want her to pick up on the life in North Hollywood, so he had sent her to live in San Bernardino, an hour east of L.A., near the military bases in the area formerly known as Sunnymead, where real estate was cheaper and the area was considered safer than the drive-by culture in L.A. Far enough away, but close enough for him to drive and see her once or twice a month.
When Big Slim's love child, a child some said he made with a Jamaican streetwalker one night, landed east in that place some people called West Hell, which was more about a part of hell itself than any geographical accuracy, she was barely a teen. But trouble was already in her blood. She ran things to the point that many gave her the city's name. She was called San Bernardino. She was our boss. She was here. She had left her throne. I guessed we were in trouble. She smelled like French wine and Italian perfume, both top shelf. Pasadena smelled like desert, lingering smog and sudden death. I asked, "Garrett paid his debt? Are you here to collect?" San Bernardino said, "The transfer finally came through, 10 seconds before midnight." "Why are you here? You only show your face on Cadillac jobs."
"You didn't think I'd let Garrett talk to me that way and live to tell about it, did you? He messed with my cabbage, then called me talking out the side of his neck, popping off like he wants a Chicago overcoat. You think I was going to let him talk to me like that and call it a day?"
"No, ma'am. I didn't think you would."
"You have 1 minute. What happened here?"
Her security detail at our back, Garrett's sole bushwhacker, still on the ground, I told San Bernardino as much as I could. She saw we had been through hell since the sun had set. She asked, "Any bodies?"
"Some out back. Maybe 3 are ready to be fitted for a pine box. Some were injured pretty bad because this was life or death, so could need 4 or 5 hearses by now." She didn't react. Nodded like she already knew.
"Who did what to whom?"
"I shot a few. Jake gave 2 a backdoor parole."
"Then this spot is already hotter than Death Valley."
"And like L.A. after the Rodney King verdict, it's the last place you need to be."
"I came to confront Garrett. No one talks to me that way. No one."
"Sleep on that anger."
"Are you telling me what to do, Ken Swift?"
"No, ma'am."
"Was there some promotion in my organization that I'm unaware of?"
"Was only a suggestion."
"Did I ask for suggestions? Did I accidentally butt dial you for a consultation?"
"No, ma'am, no, you didn't. Was just trying to make you aware of the situation."
"Watch your tone. Don't get too familiar with me. And no mansplaining. I hate that shit."
"Sorry if I overstepped my bounds."
"You did overstep. Take your brake fluid and slow your roll."
"I apologize."
"Never let people walk over you. I came to collect my respect. That is one thing Big Slim taught me, if nothing else. My daddy said to never let anyone insult you and be able to walk away. He said everybody will talk down to a colored woman, talk to her any kind of way, but it was my job to never let them get away with it. That's my job, and I'm showing up to work my shift."
"You waited on the money to transfer before you addressed this issue?"
"Of course. Pussy and money, both make the world go around. If you have pussy, you can get money. And if you have money, you can get pussy. That's the law. I was born with the pussy, and you know I always get the money. Before anything else, I have to get the money. My daddy told me that a man has to keep his money pregnant. Money should give birth to more money. If you're not making sure your money is impregnated, you're the one being fucked."
I nodded. "And since your money gave birth to more money, you're ready to fight."
"We're safe from being ambushed. How many are inside?"
"None. His bushwhackers fled. The ones that could. Might be a couple severely injured, moaning here and there. They weren't armed. They won't come after the team you brought."
"Good. I was waiting while my drone surveyed the property. My infrared told me there were 4 in the house, 3 in one room and 1 in another. I watched every movement."
"Police?"
"We've monitored. No calls have gone out from here. Neighbors can't call out if they have internet phones. I've disrupted that service for a half mile. You know me. I got that on lock."
"You came across all these freeways in the middle of the night to get your respect?"
"I don't procrastinate, and I don't play with other folks' children. You know that."
I looked up. Over the whiteness of the stately mansion, I saw a fleet of phantom drones. Counted 6 of them? Silent. Hovering, feeding images back to her workers in the SUVs.
I bet those had arrived and had been overhead before they compromised the code to the security gates. San Bernardino said,
"Take me to Mr. Richard Israel Garrett III. I need him to repeat all he said on the goddamn phone. Let's see the motherfucker talk that way to my face."
Jake Ellis had some time with him, but you probably saw that on the infrared.
"Lead me to Garrett's dingwing and show me what's left of him."
"Yes, ma'am."
Jake Ellis left Garrett contemplating life from his ghetto penthouse. She asked,
"Should I bring my daddy's double-barreled shotgun?"
"I don't think you'll need it."
"That disappoints me."
"He's been tenderized. I doubt if he can raise a hand to wipe his ass."
"I did not need that visual."
"Apologies."
"You're talking to a woman, not one of your homies on the corner."
"Understood." The boss regarded her team. I saw them up close. All were Caucasian men. She told them,
"Boys, stay alert. Watch my six."
Her man nodded. She said,
"Now, Jake Ellis."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Come with."
"Yes, ma'am." San Bernardino said,
"And turn that atrocious music off. I hate rap. It's maddening. Lyrics that promote violence and contempt for women, that misogyny.
Cut that crap off right away." "We'll see what we can do when we get inside.
Cake Eater, take my left side."
"My other left."
"Ken Swift,
put your Mississippi on my right."
"Yes, ma'am."
As soon as we started to walk, I pointed, said, "Shit, I see Mr. Garrett."
"Good. I want him to see me coming. I never hide. I want the motherfucker who had the unmitigated temerity to talk down to me to see that San Bernardino is here to make a house call."
Chapter 30. Garrett had staggered out of his bedroom. The well-appointed area had been a squared circle for at least one good round of fisticuffs. Even if he couldn't fight, I guess the Pillsbury Doughboy could take a hard blow. Princeton looked like a refugee, like a wild beast that had barely survived a Middle Eastern war. I led the way, but Jake Ellis moved in front and opened the double doors to the palace. Ghana held one door, and Mississippi held the other. San Bernardino sashayed inside, moved her wrath and grace into the extravagance of her newest enemy, and we followed her until she stopped at the base of the stairs. She took a deep breath, nostrils flared when she inhaled the fading scent of salmon, dancing with the stench of pool water that had permeated my clothing and body. With each step, I dripped. We looked up at the art, at the home that was an elegant museum, at images of Garrett and his wife. The queen from one kingdom had arrived riding on two black dragons, and she was here to handle this herself. The chandelier gave enough light, and we could see King Garrett on high from where we were. He still smelled like arrogance. He had never learned to be afraid. He was too stupid to be afraid. He rested at the top of the spiraling staircase, bloodied, but still a man who looked like he was ready to beat his chest and proclaim he was the king of all the goddamn Kongs. Biggie Smalls was still on repeat. The rapper I loved is aggravating as a nagging wife. Jake Ellis had given Garrett 10 years of blood-pissing pain in less than 2 minutes. He struggled to stay upright, held the rails, then stood at the top of the stairs, breathing heavily. Curses rained down on us, most directed at San Bernardino. Biggie Smalls swallowed all words. I knew what Garrett was saying. He had only one note. He was beaten and threatened to have us all killed before the sun hit noon. He spat over the rail. While he stood there in his own agony, the double doors to Mrs. Garrett's closet opened. She hobbled out of her cage. Her husband didn't see her behind him. She hurried up and pushed him. She growled and shoved him as he had shoved her. Mrs. Garrett shoved Mr. Garrett head first down the stairs. It happened fast. Dickie Bird tumbled head over heels, Jack without a Jill. Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came hobbling after. Mrs. Garrett took one stair at a time, held the rail, made her way down. Mr. Garrett was broken, but still twitching. I couldn't tell what damage was from Jake Ellis and what injuries had come from the fall. Mrs. Garrett stood over him and unloaded her .380 into his body. Then, eyes wide, surprised by what she had finally done. She looked at us. It took all of her energy to command,
"Alexa, stop playing Biggie Smalls."
Mrs. Garrett smelled like pool water, too. She smelled bad, and I knew I smelled worse. I could smell her pain, agony leaving her pores. San Bernardino took in Mrs. Garrett, took in her injuries, her black eyes and bald head, and she moved closer to the wounded woman. Mrs. Garrett looked so bad that, before she spoke, San Bernardino thought she was facing a man. Mrs. Garrett wiped her nose.
"He beat me, cut off all my hair, raped me, tried to drown me."
San Bernardino was unfazed. "Then that cowboy you married did a Dutch act."
"I don't know what that means."
"He committed suicide. If he did what you have claimed, this was a Dutch act. He had started a Dutch act when he talked down to me on the phone. All roads led to this moment."
"He beat me, cut off all my hair, raped me, tried to drown me."
Mrs. Garrett looked diminutive, naive, body battered, life shattered, tears falling.
"He beat me, cut off all of my hair, raped me, tried to drown me."
She softly, sweetly, innocently, and painfully said her mantra, as if she were practicing it for the police, for attorneys, for the jury, for the judge. She practiced the words, sounded like a child who hadn't done anything wrong. She had the look. She had the pedigree. Killers didn't look like her. Even if she was a cold-blooded killer, she could put on a Casey Anthony routine at her trial. Her hair would grow back, and it would be like seeing Taylor Swift being tried for manslaughter. She could become America's obsession. She could become every battered woman's hero. Jake Ellis moved forward to help, but I grabbed his arm. It would have been a tell that he had touched that woman. She might have thrown her arms around him like he was her hero. I let the woman cry and shake and shiver and look down at the blood on the floor. Garrett smelled worse than rotten eggs cooked until they were burned using Vaseline as cooking oil. He had that new death rank, the one that came when bowels loosened upon death. She cried, asked Garrett to get up, begged him not to be dead. She asked her husband to please move. San Bernardino went to Mrs. Garrett, eased the smoking gun from the distraught woman's hand. San Bernardino was a hard woman, a thief, a con, a killer. But she was still a mother. And it didn't matter that the woman she faced looked like a refugee Caucasian from the mountains of Caucasia. Her dark hand held one that could have been the descendant of a Viking from Iceland.
"He beat me, cut off all of my hair, raped me, tried to drown me."
Women could look at other women and recognize all the evil things that men had done. Women had experiences that bonded them, had their own fears, same as blacks in America. San Bernardino regarded me.
"Is this contained?"
I nodded. Garrett brought me here to make me swim with the fishes and probably to dispose of my body, so I'm sure he made sure it was contained. San Bernardino told Mrs. Garrett,
"I can fix this. I can make this nightmare go away."
Mouth bloodied, Mrs. Garrett babbled,
"He cut my hair. He knew how much I loved my hair."
San Bernardino looked at the stunning pictures of Mrs. Garrett gracing the walls.
"What do I do now?"
The widowed woman's voice splintered.
"I don't know what to do."
"We do what we always do at times like this."
"Should I call the police?"
"Too much would have to be explained."
"I'm scared."
"Jake Ellis, I'm sure they have coffee in this barn."
"We have good coffee, the best coffee. Dickie Bird only drinks Kopi Luwak Indonesian coffee.
tastes good, like chocolate caramel. It's his coffee. It gives me gas really bad. Jake Ellis, make the coffee.
Yes, Mom.
San Bernardino handed me her phone.
Ken Swift, page my Honduran cleaners.
Yes, ma'am.
And the crematorium in Santa Monica, the one on Broadway I use from time to time.
Yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Garrett was wide-eyed.
I shot Dickie Bird.
While the men serve us, you and I will have a little talk.
Why would we call the dry cleaners?
Sweetheart, you mean Richard is your husband and this is your first crime scene?
The worst day of my life.
My cleaners are bioremediation specialists for the Mexican cartels. Do you understand?
She sobbed, eyes on her fallen king.
What about my Dickie Bird?
You're having a meltdown.
I shot my Dickie Bird.
Mrs. Garrett, sit down in your kitchen.
I did love him. Even when I cheated, I loved him.
Sit and have a sip of water.
Where did you come from? You just appeared like an angel. Who are you?
I am your savior.
You are beautiful. I've never seen a black savior.
We're everywhere, yet invisible to the world.
Who do you work for? I will help you fix this. Like a fairy godmother?
Better than a fairy godmother.
You're pretty as the mayor of Compton.
Prettier. When I look in my mirror, it says I'm the prettiest of them all.
He tried to kill me.
I just need you to take a few deep breaths so we can start.
That monster cut off all of my hair.
Men are trash.
He tried to drown me. I think I died. I swear, I think I died.
Dutch act. Whenever a man touches you in a bad way, make sure it's his Dutch act. Each time. My daddy told me to never let there be a person walking this earth who can claim they disrespected you. Women, all we have is our reputation. Your reputation always arrives before you do. So we sit down, we talk, we take a lot of pictures, and we make an agreement.
You can fix this?
You hire me to fix this, and in 4 hours, it will be like this never happened.
He pushed me down the stairs. He tried to drown me.
And he has paid the ultimate price.
When she said that, there was movement. And a groan.
Garrett moved. Mrs. Garrett screamed. His hand moved back and forth, moved his legs. Jake Ellis stepped closer.
He shut up, but he's not dead.
I deleted him. And God undeleted him. God is rebooting Dickie Bird.
I asked the boss, what do you want me to do? San Bernardino said,
good, he's alive. I'm happy he's not dead.
Mrs. Garrett said,
he will kill me for shooting him. He'll kill me.
Probably. If someone shot me that way, Jesus knows I would. San Bernardino reached in her purse, pulled out a pair of blue surgical gloves, eased them on, and went to the bloodied man. His eyes were open, but there were no words, just the look of a man who wanted help, a man who didn't want to die. He was made of something that most men weren't made of. And so was San Bernardino. She said,
glad you're alive. I needed to look in your eyes and dare you to talk down to me the way you did on the phone. That really rubbed me the wrong way. Because I was born with nothing, and because I was born a woman, doesn't mean I am nothing. Garrett, speak up. You have no idea how much I have had to endure to get to where I am. At every turn, there is someone like you. Look in my eyes. Disrespect me. Talk down to me now, you swindling son of a bitch.
Garrett gurgled. It sounded ugly, grotesque, and still belligerent and challenging.
Glad I didn't have to drive this far for nothing, not with gas prices being ridiculously high.
San Bernardino held Garrett's nose and covered his mouth.
Mrs. Garrett screamed.
No, no, no!
San Bernardino looked at her, rage rising in her eyes. Mrs. Garrett said,
he's my husband! My husband! I should do that!
The rage became a small smile.
Let me show you how. Can I drag him out back and throw him in the deep end of the swimming pool? Let's keep it simple, shall we? We can do it together.
If there was another man inside every man, a stranger, a conniving man, that philosophy was the same for all women. San Bernardino covered Garrett's mouth, pressed down hard with her palm. His wife pulled back her hoodie, showed him what he had done to her face and hair, wanted him to see what he had done, and scowled in his panic-stricken eyes as she pinched his nose. He jumped. Filled with bullets, broken and battered, he bucked. Mrs. Garrett snapped, then yelled,
Go to hell already, Dickie Bird. Just die, you moron, you worthless piece of shit from Compton. You're stupid. Without me, you'd be nothing. Be glad you're pretty, because that's all you have going for you. Tell me those things again before this Dutch act is over. You were horrible in bed. Took too long to come, and you even die slow.
Seconds later, it was done. Once death clocked in, it was efficient. Never took long.
You should have been nicer to me. Dickie Bird, you should have been a lot nicer.
San Bernardino removed her gloves, turned them inside out into a ball. Mrs. Garrett shuddered, wiped away tears, then washed her hands in the kitchen, put lotion in her left palm, creamed her hands, strawberry scent rising to meet death, and went back to San Bernardino. San Bernardino sipped the decadent coffee Jake Ellis put in front of her, then smiled at Mrs. Garrett, patted the distraught woman on her leg twice, then asked,
Now, where were we? You said you can make all of this go away?
I can. Your black savior, your fairy godmother, can do just that.
Will I get to keep his money? Minus my fee. Even the $50 million he has hidden in the bank in Barbados?
I went to a patio window that Jake Ellis had broken, looked out back, looked at the pool, imagined my body floating there, Mrs. Garrett's apple booty not far away. Saw the dead and the wounded. Jake Ellis followed me. We threw the wounded men in the pool. That was my idea. A man can't try to kill me and get to go home and eat Fruit Loops. The bushwhackers knew where I lived. They knew where Jake Ellis lived. Jake Ellis said, What about the one you sent out the door first?
San Bernardino will handle that.
She scares me.
She scares me, too.
I looked up. San Bernardino's drones hovered over our heads. Jake Ellis asked,
She know about Margot and about the Zawakowiak?
Nah.
Let's keep it that way, as long as we can.
She's your goddaughter, Jake.
I know. That's why San Bernardino hasn't been informed.
I need to learn how to be that brat's daddy.
Light bright.
I nodded. Put on Billie Jean. Bet she could moonwalk. That was funny. We went to our boss, and Jake Ellis told all of us his part of the night, that Garrett had done a drive-by and tried to burn down Leimert Park like racists had done Black Wall Street. 20 minutes later, two vans arrived. Honduran cleaners! Chapter 31 Fire trucks had come and gone, same for the police, an ambulance, and the crowd, but the stench lingered in Leimert Park. Nothing smelled like a car that had been burned until the fiberglass had melted into the concrete. Nothing smelled like a man who had caught fire and was unable to outrun the flames. We were people made of energy, and this morning the energy was off. I felt the fear. People on Jake Ellis's block had been woken by gunshots, shouts, curses, a man on fire, and the screaming of sirens hours ago. Same level of noise had come from the slave catcher mobiles when they arrived in what had felt like Baghdad. Gunshots had hit four windows, had terrified everyone in the 12-unit U-shaped building. More shots had hit the building, and the yellow police tape showed Jake Ellis's complex was marked as a crime scene.
but no one was injured. His car had been set on fire. Scorned women did that all the time in the hood, the ones who had evolved beyond keying automobiles to make themselves feel better, but the slags knew this wasn't a lover's quarrel. The gunshots, the man on fire, the sounds of men screaming, put together, it had made something else in the wild, wild west. Not even Crips and Bloods were rocking it that way, not on this side of town. We were too close to the mansions and wealth. 100 windows faced Stocker from both sides of the pond. People young and old had seen Garrett's bushwhackers rush into an ice cream truck, but hadn't seen their swarthy faces up close. Just saw a strapping black man in dark clothes, men rocking Timbs, the standard street attire of the Shaw since the 90s. On this side of town, if anyone had seen Richard Garrett on Stocker in that darkness, on our dimly lit street just right of the midnight hour, they would have assumed Dickie Bird was either Creole or a light-skinned old-school Negro with processed hair. No one would believe that in California, a white man had the balls to step into the 90008 and do to a neighborhood in flux what Klansmen had done in the Bible Belt. Good news was, the gunshots might slow down gentrification by at least 1 week. Bad news was, they would make prices drop. Lower prices would then accelerate gentrification. For all we know, they could have been white men in blackface. That's the kind of stuff they do. Saw it on the internet. Me too. A white boy in Ohio was robbing banks and drugstores and every place else wearing a mask to make him look just like a black man, and he almost got away with it. That's the kind of stuff they do to get police to shooting every black man they see. Without race being factored in, with no way to tie last night to any gang, this was too big for the police to ignore, but too small for the suntanned news people in L.A. to care about. There were no swastikas. No one this color had killed someone of that color. Couldn't blame Muslims. Jews lived in the area, but nothing anti-Semitic had been found. If this had happened 6 miles away in Beverly Hills, CNN would have been out front with 2 trucks. But here, to America, this wasn't news. A police report would be done for kicks, but there wouldn't be much of a follow-up. I had missed it, but last night, 20 cop cars had come and lit up the area with their rainbows of lights, down where lower-income melanin-blessed Americans accused AT&T of redlining by giving them low-speed internet access. It was being tweeted, retweeted, and repeated and liked and shared on Facebook. Video of the car fire and bullet holes was being circulated via the Nextdoor app's View Park section. The fire was out, but the cops would be back. They wanted to talk to the African called Jake Ellis. It was his car. It was registered to his true name, to his African name, not his adopted name. Jake Ellis's leased Mustang was unrecognizable, had been set fire to, and with an accelerant, and it had burned from one end to the other. My 38 was inside, under the seat, probably surrounded by plastic from the stash box. The gun was clean, had no bodies on it. Was registered to me, and I had no problem saying I had left it in my friend's car. The vehicles street parked in front and in back of Jake Ellis's muscle car had caught some heat, too, enough to melt plastic. His Haitian lover had fled when Jake Ellis had gone after Garrett. The professor, the high-class, degreed, married woman, couldn't be here when the cops came. She couldn't come running out of a burning building half-naked. People knew she had a younger lover here, but for appearances, Jake Ellis's landlord needed to be home with her husband when the call came. Then they rushed back to their damaged property as husband and wife. He was an intellectual. She had her alibi. If her husband knew, it didn't show in public. I asked Jake Ellis, "Bro, what you want to do?" "Bruv, have them drop me around back. I'll hit the alley and go in my back door. You can come to my place until the crowd dies down." "Nah, I'll go in my back door. I need a shower and fresh clothes." "Yeah, you stink." "Rob, smell yourself and fix your own stank before you talk about me." From the back seat of one of San Bernardino's SUVs, while non-talking white men, young enough to be our sons, chauffeured us down Stocker, as we slowed by where Garrett's bushwhackers had attacked Jake Ellis in front of his destroyed car, we saw more neighbors at once than we ever had. Black, white, Asian, Mexican, Puerto Rican, Dominican, African. Windows were tinted limousine black. We could see the crowd,
no one could see us. Jake Ellis said, "Them here, them all over, standing and shaking heads.